MTR Network. This is Herosia, and I am here with Ro and Parrish, and we're going to review the second season of The Twilight Zone. It was a 13 episodes, and okay, I'm going to give some really quick thoughts. I really enjoyed some of these episodes, but since I'm a child of a cook, the best way I can give it is I felt my plate was very good, but there was just something missing over the overall season. And let's hear everyone else's thoughts on that. If anyone else has anything to say.
Ro, you take it.
I feel like they made a better choice by dropping all the episodes at once. It gave me kind of more of an idea of what the theme for the whole season was going to be. But I felt like what was missing was what we finally got in the ultimate episode 10 last year in Blurry Man. And I really enjoyed this season. There's actually an episode this season that made me go scream hell no and throw my remote and walk away from the TV, and and I wasn't expecting that. And Parrish, you're laughing at me because I told you which episode it is, but shut up. I actually enjoyed this season. I think that it's still a little hit or miss. I think that some of the modernization is still a little heavy-handed on the thematic end, but look, feel, and cast, it's head and shoulders above last season, and that's saying something because last season had some phenomenal talent.
Yeah, I think both of you hit the nail on the head. You know, going into the season, and I think we talked about this last season, you know, we were giving the show a pass because, you know, I think uneven was sort of an understatement with the first season, talent aside. What I wanted was a solid progression. Like, I wanted to walk away with a feeling like the show was getting its legs. And I think it's getting its legs. I think it knows what it wants to be. I really enjoyed this season a lot. Much, much more than the first season. I'm really patient with these types of shows. Let's see what season 3 has. But, you know, overall, I really enjoyed it.
I'm not saying I didn't enjoy the season. I do think it was a great improvement and a build off of the first season. It's just, there was a couple episodes where the turns were not what I quite expected. And I was like, oh, you guys were almost there. You almost had it. And, but for the most part, I enjoyed more episodes this season than I did last season. And was number 8 the one that scared the shit out of you, Ro? Because that's the one that scared me.
No, I was okay with number 8, ironically enough. Although, you know, I don't want to ever live in a small town. It was episode 6.
The number of the name of the episode, which was 8, which is the one with the octopus.
Oh, yeah. 8. Yes. You meant 8. You meant 8. Yes. Look.
I love that episode.
I completely adore everything about that episode, but also fuck that episode.
It got
you. Yeah, like I kind of wanted that to be like a movie almost. Mm-hmm. Like it could have been a movie.
You ain't sending me through that whole thing. No, ma'am. No.
But even at the very beginning, I thought, oh, this could be like a really good creepy mini. And then they did that one kill that was like, oh, no. Oh, no. No, 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 no.
I love under the sea dramas. And my love for those dramas is only eclipsed from my love for under the sea horror. But I forgot one thing that scares the ever loving shit out of me. Cthulhu. And yep. The concept of the Sleeping King. I forgot exactly how much that kind of messes with me deep to my soul. And 8 reminded me. And I broke my remote. So,
So
I'm not okay on 8.
What I love about the resolution of the show is something that I've always kind of played with in my head in terms of science fiction. Like, you know, we are, as a species, is really, you know, we're really sure of our importance. And I've always thought about what if humanity is the stopgap for the real rulers of
the problem is galaxy. I don't think it's what if. I don't think it's what if.
Well,
that's why this bothers me. I was this movie reminded me why I said I was okay maybe with more possibly, you know, a Skynet situation than like a sea dwelling overlord. This reminded me why.
Yeah, see, because like in the beginning when the squid was like messing with them, I was like, oh, this could be like a really dark humor kind of comedy thing. And then it did that kill. And it decloaks basically like a Klingon bird of prey, and it was in the guy's mouth and it went after the other dude and he hacked and it wasn't doing anything because it was still killing him. I was like, no.
Yep.
That was great.
Yep. No. Okay. Anybody who does the closed room, there may be a face hugger thing in here with me, is probably I'll watch anything you want to make. Like episode 6 is my jam and my worst nightmare. But you know, it's also one of the things that I felt showcased why I'm okay with this new iteration of the Twilight Zone. I think people are too impatient and they forget that the reason that Rod Serling started all this is because he wanted to talk about what happened to Emmett Till. And he wanted to talk about, you know, perceptions and assumptions and double motives and the way what we come together for and our lynch mob mentality and all those different things. And episode 6 probably for me had the best subtle reminder of all of those things, because, you know, what was the synopsis? There's a team of scientists to discover a highly intelligent species, but its existence may be endangered more by their research. So you've got humans doing that thing that we do, stealing, and firmly believing that it's our right to kind of push anything to our purpose because we thieves. And what that means and what would it and then you've got another different type of person who's all set to do a whole different kind of exploitation. So I was like, oh, this didn't go in the direction that I thought it was going to go. It maintained focus on the thing and made me come to where it was. And I feel like season 2 did that a lot better than season 1. Season 1 was a little heavy-handed in trying to drag you to the point.
It was screaming message half the time. We didn't need it. We're fairly smart people.
You
sometimes
mean the non-black people watching the show. I'm gonna say it because I'll say it. I think a lot of people for season 2 who may have felt that season 1 was too heavy-handed are gonna feel that season 2 didn't necessarily quote sell its message.
I don't think that's what it is, because I feel like the overall theme of this season was the things that man does to itself is the biggest problem. And that was consistent throughout the season. Like small town, the Damon Wayne Jr., it was kind of like a funny, kind of more family friendly ish, if you will, of the Twilight Zone episodes.
There's nothing family friendly about big ass tarantulas.
No, there's not. And I got freaked out because I'm so afraid of tarantulas from, one, living out here, two, arachnophobia. And seeing that tarantula go after that man, I was like, I know he's a dick, but come on, man, that's really fucked up. And he ended up accidentally kind of destroying his town, yet saving his town because of his own hubris and stuff like that. But yeah, that was like kind of a consistent theme throughout. But this one, the 6, it had like the little spy thing where the two Americans were doing one thing and the Chinese person was doing another thing, and the squid monster was like, fuck all of you guys, this is what we're gonna do and we know what you're doing, and stole their stuff. And
you're like, thanks for coming down so I didn't have to come find you.
But in this, in that story, it is the very foundation of what science fiction, of how science fiction came about.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's why I said it's the greatest and worst thing I've ever watched in my
life. Yeah. Because the foundation of science fiction, you know, through the Victorian age up until about the modern, about, you know, when we started getting like modern tales, is What if aliens came or robots came and did the same thing to us that we do to each other?
And
that's War of the Worlds.
Yeah, that's what War of the Worlds is. And the squid monster is like.
Or what if they don't care about what we need more than what they need?
Exactly. It's like, you know, thank you guys. Thank you for the information. Now we're going to go and I'm going to use it because we can and make ourselves be able to go on land and look with, watch out.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Okay. But since it seems like we're talking out of episodes out of order, I think that leads, that little comment leads directly well into episode 10. You might also like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like the structure of episode 10 where it was like kind of chapters, like you're reading a book. Like you're reading like almost like a history book, if you will, a tale. And I also noticed like that the towards the end when she's actually going to get the egg, that the piece of paper, it looked like an old style recipe paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like mapped out that way.
Because
like the ingredients. Yeah, the ingredients and stuff like that.
I mean, because the whole idea behind it, when you really start thinking about it, is, again, we've done this to ourselves. We, you know, how many movies have we seen? Or the episode where they went into space last season to go to Mars and they ran into the signal where we put commercials into space.
Yes.
So how many times have we done this? How many things have we seen where we've done something completely stupid? And we have no idea who's hearing it. And, you know, now that's like we've done this to ourselves, here's the consequences of what you sent out into space and you frightened somebody with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why they were afraid is a wholly and completely very, very, and quite frankly, American reason for fear. You change your mind too much.
You change your minds too much, yeah. I didn't quite like that aspect of it, but I did think it made me think about how we propagate as from American perspective, the media that we propagate globally and how people perceive Americans, particularly Black Americans,
mm-hmm.
But Americans in general, their perception of us and when it gets regurgitated back, like how they think of us, you know, and I think that was an interesting comment, but I was like, he could have come up with something better there, guys, with that.
Well, I like the subtlety of it for the simple fact that I live in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And San Diego likes to pretend that it is a highly progressive, socially conscious, diverse, inclusive county.
It's so not, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's a whole, it's a whole ass lie.
Yeah.
And right about now, all the different layers are coming to the surface. So an episode that's actually talking about existential dread, an mm-hmm. episode that talks about what people are willing to do rather than confront the reality of their life up to and including, you know, saying, keeping quiet about the fact, I know this thing that everybody is being, you know, buying for propaganda is actually going to kill us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to go home and be with my people. You know, it makes a kind of sense. And I think it's ironic that this episode aired on the 24th, but we all know it was filmed far before any of the stuff that's happening right now. But
yes,
but it speaks directly into that kind of thing. You've got this one person, one, we could just rename her Karen because she's damn sure going to speak to somebody's supervisor.
Yes.
But you also have this woman who clearly understands that something she's being told doesn't make sense. She's being asked to take something on faith and she doesn't have the faith that other people have because she's had something that's impacted her ability to keep her blinders on. Grief. Mm-hmm.
Grief, upset. Yes.
You know, so now you've got this woman who's in here and her peppy ass friend who I really love how she played the character. She's like, my life is not like yours. I'm out. And, you know, even after having experienced the thing that's happening to her, she's like, yes. No, that's not nope. me. You're not
that's
like
not
me. We don't have anything in common. So even throwing it in her face wasn't enough. And I really appreciate the subtlety of how they did that. And I thought it was, you know, it was well done. It was well sparse. But then you've got the whole thing that it comes down to. It's a hive mind. It's a collective.
Right.
We're afraid of you free thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it would take the collective energy of all of us for us to not only change our mind, but change our direction and our trajectory. And we've watched you and we've observed you, but only what you've given of us to watch. And everything we've learned about you says that you're a threat. You're a danger. We can't allow you to continue. So they didn't come here looking for us. We told them we were here. And then the crap that we told them about us was so haphazard and hodgepodgey and not even the best of us, mm-hmm. that they're like, something wrong with those people. We need to control or we need to eradicate them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And just watching like the disconnect that was going on, where you see basically you can hear and see the ending of the world and they're all still marching towards the egg. This collectiveness that these aliens have done, and just demonstrates, you know, like, yeah, we are very dangerous creatures. We will blindly go off the cliff, if you will, possess that thing.
And it pierces the veil of what we consider to be free thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because oftentimes, when we consider ourselves to be individual free thinkers, we really aren't.
Mm-hmm. Right,
we're just following our particular tribe,
right?
And so, yeah, there's a lot of really juicy things about how they sort of developed this conflict between the hive mind and humanity.
Yeah, but I loved it. I mean, and that's why I thought the theme from episode one, Meet in the Middle, all the way through episode 10, you might also like kind of worked a little better, because it took a different aspect of either the personality type of humans or people or a character traits that fit with a particular thought process. And it put them in a setting that makes you ask a question. What do you really want? What do you really need? What are you really hoping to get out of this? Like for Ovation with Justice Mellett's episode.
Okay, I love that episode, but my understanding that ending's a little controversial for people. So
how so?
I thought that ending was perfect.
Like some people thought that maybe the sister was jealous the whole time. I don't think so. I think she was trying to save her sister, but I still love that episode.
I think she was trying to save her sister and she was jealous because her sister was her father's favorite, or at least to her mind she was.
Okay. I think I can see that a little bit, but I felt just maybe it's my perspective as being the eldest or something. Like she's like, I know you can't handle this burden, so I'm gonna take this from you and handle it.
Oh, you are feeling really generous, because I like that heifer has been trying to convince people to drop you on your behind since day one. She was resentful of what I felt like she perceived to be the greater freedom. And, you know,
in the beginning, but when her sister was actually started succeeding a little bit, she was like, okay, yeah, but
she's try also to
be yourself.
She's also opportunistic.
Oh, we have two totally different perspectives.
But her definition of her sister being herself was being her.
True. True. I will agree with that. And I also see from the sister's perspective of being in the shadow of a sister that's always excelled in life,
yeah,
and is the doctor and all these things.
Siblings are annoying.
Yes, they're very annoying. And having these things and not being that as successful, but still wanting to seeking validation from people, like maybe I'm not like NBA level, but I have this thing that I'm very good at, and not yeah.
But I liked how they played into the fact of what do you do? What do you add? What do you contribute? And she's like, I save lives and I make lives worth living. I thought that was just like a really, especially having it be a conversation between two sisters who clearly are both talented in their mm-hmm. own ways. And,
yes. You know,
and just that different perspective of two people who clearly grew up in the same house, had the same kind of support system.
Mm-hmm.
And one went more of a traditional way. Who's still creative in their own way? Because I don't know if I want somebody who's not creative doing exploratory surgery inside my body.
No, you don't.
Oh, no, no.
Absolutely
no.
I need you to maintain the flexibility of your thinking to save my life if you get in there and find something yes. you weren't expecting. But but you also have this other person who, you know, you may save the body, but I feed the soul. Mm-hmm. And that kind of difference of disrespect. And her sister could not handle the fact that she wasn't willing to travel a traditional path in any way. But the second that her sister got put on and she saw the accolade and the public acknowledgement that she doesn't get for saving lives, because it's not a part. We don't celebrate doctors that way.
Yeah, but we doctors do get some celebration.
We do not celebrate doctors the same way we celebrate Beyonce.
Okay. No, not the same level, no. But...
I am not saying that doctors are not celebrated personalities. I am not saying that they're not person. I'm talking about as a general public, the concept of a physician, of your doctor. You know what I mean? We don't laud that, because if we did, we wouldn't. The whole argument we had yesterday about the healthcare system and provider networks never would be a thing. But no. So we don't centralize them as our rock stars. Now, there are rock star doctors.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at it from a different vantage point, because I think that's perfectly valid. I think what I keep coming back to is that is the way in which we idolize people or worship people independent of what their actual actions are. So, like, during this whole thing where Journey had the coin, it didn't really matter what she did or what she sang. They automatically just gave her the accolades. And I think that applies across the board. Now, there's more notoriety for someone in pop culture who is like a musician or artist or an actor, where, we have given artists passes when we really know that they're not that talented. We just like them because we like them, or they have a spell over us. And so I was just sort of like looking at it from that perspective.
Also, she was a little bit more grounded, maybe, because, or too grounded for the coin, because she was like, I didn't even play that well and they still gave it to me. I don't understand.
And that's the part. Yeah, that's the part of the show that kept sticking with me, is that, like, her popularity was not because of her actual talent. It was because of the spell. And that ultimately was what undid her.
But it made her question her talent, because she, you know, she never got to finish a song before they started clapping. She never got to finish speaking before somebody was already ready to give her a standing ovation. And because she persistently heard her sister say she wasn't good enough, and consistently overheard her sister trying to convince her father to stop supporting her because she didn't have what it took to make that dream happen. When it did happen, she immediately questioned it, and she immediately identified that the cause had to be outside of herself. And that's the other thing that I thought was really great. It falls into this whole idea of, you know, talent versus timing, participation trophies versus an earned win. And, you know, what it does to you and your psyche and whether or not you could question it. This broke her. This completely broke her, like, to the point to where she went off and hid. And it wasn't until she started getting notifications that you know, no one's coming looking for her. So clearly the spell has been broken. But she didn't go back and, like, try to do it without the coin to see if people still wanted to listen to her. She didn't remember that people had been listening to her sing before the coin kicked in when she first started to play the song.
Yes.
So she completely questioned her own ability to succeed and to thrive. And it was all because she got a participation trophy.
She did the. This isn't an exact analogy, but she did the opposite of what George Michael did. So, like, George Michael got all of this, all these accolades for Faith, and then he spent the rest of his career basically doing the opposite of Faith.
Yeah, to prove that he belonged there.
Right, to prove that he could be the musician that he felt he was.
Yeah, but he did it twice because, you know, first, remember, he was in Wham.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was in Wham. Yes,
but
it, even that was a very different construction than George Michael as Faith.
Yeah, he was structured, and then he, you know, I think he built an image that he would have gladly torn down, since it put him in a box and held him hostage for the majority of his life, and then which ended up, you know, almost breaking his career when he finally got caught with a man. I was like, set yourself up as a sex symbol.
And that was the next iteration.
Yeah. I was like, what are you doing? But that's what I really liked about the episode Ovation, because it talked about, you know, her sister kept saying, you need to be yourself. But she thought she was being herself until her sister told her she wasn't. And then so when she started questioning the response people were having to her, it also made her question her own worthiness to herself. Because the people who were supposed to be rooting for, maybe this is why I got mad at the sister and I don't necessarily have good feelings for the sister. The sister was never rooting for her.
And then I sort of agree with you on that. I think that there was sort of a backhanded element to,
So I always felt like if the people who are supposed to be supporting you aren't supporting you, and you find yourself in a position to where you're questioning your worthiness to be there, and you believe that the reason that you got there is because you basically failed up.
Yes.
You're going to fall apart.
Yes, she did. Well, I can see it from that way. I thought it was more of the withdrawal from the attention, because it clearly, like, her being in that cabin and that isolation seemed very much similar to a drug withdrawal, if you will. I didn't understand why, like, maybe her father didn't come and see her, or even the sister. But now we know, we found out later the reason why that was. But that's how I felt that was going on with her when she finally broke out and tried to find out why this one particular person is being praised over everyone else.
And see, even that, I like the complexity of that, because it makes you ask the question, is she on withdrawal from the accolades? Is she on withdrawal from being creative? Is she on having withdrawal from a mixture of the two, where she liked the idea that people appreciated her art? And I think those three are very different things. Yeah. You know, there are people that want to be musicians, and there are people and artists, and then there are people that want to be rock stars. And those are two distinct identities. And so it was very interesting. I think that episode did a lot of not holding our hand.
And I love the fact that it left all these questions open.
Yeah, and that's how all three of us could come from very different vantage points, because it did a very good job of not making us think a certain way.
No.
Yeah.
So that was an episode I really enjoyed and I liked a lot. Though I wonder if, I didn't know if Smollett deliberately not play the guitar well, or she can actually play the guitar well, because I know she's a musician and a singer. I felt a little weirded out about her guitar playing. I don't know. It just bothered me a little bit.
It comes back to the part, one of the conceits of the story is that the people are not rooting, her sister's not necessarily rooting for her, but the people certainly aren't rooting for her.
No.
She doesn't matter what she wants.
Because remember, the girl asked her when she said, what do you want? She says, I want what you have. And she says, what do I have? I think she broke herself. Mm-hmm. I think that question got stuck in her head. And I think it circled back around and it kind of resonated with her. And I think she broke herself a little. Because she can play, and she was playing beautifully at the beginning, and then suddenly all of that fell apart and it never came back. So I was like, you question your basic ability now. And honestly, I thought it was the greatest visual demonstration of what happens to someone who is having a crisis of imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And they did it all without talking. So, you know, we got this. I felt like Ovation was really about what the main character was about, imposter syndrome. But I also felt like it was about rivalry, jealousy, opportunism, you know, support, and all of the things that honestly build what your version of imposter syndrome ends up looking like when you grow up. And so I thought it was really well done. So I appreciate it. But can we talk about the first episode, Meet in the Middle, if we're going to talk about people and whether or not they're crazy?
I love this episode. Okay.
I like this episode, but at what point did you realize that she was playing him? Was it early on?
Pretty early on.
Okay.
I didn't like her from the second she showed up in his head, man. I was like, I question you. I'm like, you're really comfortable with this dude talking to you. Like, and then I was like, when she tried to manipulate more information out of him than out of her the first time. Yeah, I was like, she's up to something.
Yeah. I didn't know what the catch was until she's like, oh, I'm married. Or he figured out she was married. I was like, oh, she's going to get him to kill her husband.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then it just became a question.
What it was. Yeah.
It just became a question of, does he get driven to it because, you know, you've got some Jesse's girls problems, you know, I wish I had, mm-hmm. or does she or is it actually going to be an out and out manipulation? And can I tell you, I'm happy at the direction they chose, but that's just because I'm a little bloodthirsty and terrible.
Well, you can at least justify the behavior.
I mean, I thought, look, okay, if somebody pops up in my head and starts being able to hear my thoughts and talking to me, and I can figure out really easily that this person is a sad, lonely individual, and I got a problem, and I'm a terrible person with no conscience and no ethic, I can see how you get where you get to where they get in the end of that episode. I mean, she made a judgment call of who was more important, and she decided that she and her family were more important than him and his needs.
Yes.
And she warned him.
Don't go looking into me, yeah.
Don't look for me.
Yeah, but that wasn't a warning.
Of course
not. That was a honeypot.
Of course. But what I... it was. You know, it was still honey with a little clover in it. Tasted real good. But what I meant when I said she warned him is when she told him, we can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. Don't contact me. Don't talk to me. Stay away from me. She warned him. But she also told him, I'm setting you up. She told him, you're here for a purpose. You have a purpose. You'll discover your purpose. Trust me. I promise. She set him up. And she told him she was gonna. Mm-hmm. And like a dude, he got his nose open and couldn't see past it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, which one is more like the dude? This episode or The Who of You? The one where the body jumping.
See, we're not even talking about the real. I thought you were going to bring up the real juicy one, but we'll go ahead. We'll go with this one.
Try.
Well, I didn't like try.
I loved it. Because it's such a dude.
Well, he was such a dude, and he was a toxic dude, and I was like, okay, and stuff. But
I feel like between episode one, Meet in the Middle, The Who of You, and try, you got a fully formed, multifaceted view of dude.
Yes.
I'm not going to argue that.
and before people feel like we're being, you know, we're just bagging on me, you also got a full, three-dimensional, multifaceted, different look at girl.
Among the Untrodden, that was my favorite of the season.
The Who of You?
No, not The Who of You. Among the Untrodden, the girl of you.
Oh.
Yeah.
We can't skip to the Untrodden yet. We can't skip to the
Untrodden. Okay.
We have to talk about The Who of You and try.
Okay.
So what did you like or not like about... What, Pete? Cut me off. Do it.
Can I cut you off for just one second? Because this is what was so juicy about this season to me. Like, so last season we had the one with the placebo effect, mm-hmm. and it had some really juicy sort of like gender dynamics and discussions of gender dynamics. They took that and they put, like, to your point, they put that shit in the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that.
But
okay, so the thing I didn't like about try was I don't think they gave it enough valid reason for that person that's so obsessed not to keep on continuing, like keep going in the circle. It was just the indie. That's the only thing I did not like about that episode.
For which one? The Who of You?
Yeah.
The try.
Oh, okay.
The try, why he decided not to continue pursuing her. I know she kicked his ass or whatever, but... I feel like he was still would have continued. That personality still would have continued to do.
I think she didn't let him.
Right. That's what I that's where I landed. I landed on she thwarted him. It wasn't so much that he gave up.
And so the question for me becomes, to what extent, I mean, she says that she wasn't aware of any of this. To what extent did she know that she was repeating that day?
Oh, okay. I'm gonna have to watch that episode again.
See, something that's where I got changed. Stuck. I had to go watch it twice too, and I ended up where Parrish is now. I'm like, yep, yep, I agree.
Something changed along the way because she's aware of what's going on. So because you look at that end scene where she almost gets hit and she looks over and smiles at him, I got you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, see, I interpreted just from the first time that maybe he didn't actually really save her. Like, it was always a setup, like, oh, she almost gets it, but pull her away.
I think it was a legit meet cute the first time. If, you know, okay. Almost getting obliterated by a moving vehicle is a meet cute, but, you know, Hollywood. I thought it was a legit meet cute the first time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I always, yeah, okay. I'm gonna have to watch it again. All right.
Yeah, I watched it twice, and I gotta watch it again because I want to know, like, to what extent does she know that she's now replaying this?
Yeah.
Because go ahead.
Okay. Well, that's the question about the Groundhog movie, which is the kind of the repetitive thing that people do. Was like, why was what's her name, McDowell's character actually fall in love with Bill Murray? Because she never went through the day. She never improved like he did.
But there was But there was nothing wrong with her.
There was nothing wrong with her. There was everything wrong with him. But if there's nothing wrong with her, and the first impression she got from the very beginning of the day was his asshole, and then he's starting to be nice to her, doesn't still explain why they really like connected that night.
Because The Groundhog Day is one of my favorite movies, but
that's I know it's my favorite movie too.
But I've always put it down to, and my mom, you know, my mom was like, well, eventually he found a way to get on her level, and it made her reevaluate whether or not her first opinion and her first impression is the one she should hold it to. And it's one of those places where, you know, you have to, there's a fine line between people are who they are and people can change and grow. And that's kind of where I land. He was a bitter person who was always in their head, and he always led with the bitterness that was in his head.
Mm-hmm.
And getting stuck in his own day, you know, he reached a real nihilistic place, because I don't really know how else you'd call just walking in front of vehicles and jumping off cliffs. I'm gonna steal this money and go. So like, but on the other side of it, he started to realize that the things that he wanted and the things that he was missing and that weren't giving him happiness were things that were within his control, and it always came back to something that she had said. So she had already given him the roadmap of what he could do to change or live to his best nature. He didn't stop being who he was. He didn't try to stop being who he was. He stopped living to his and leading with his worst personality traits.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've given someone a bad impression of you, but then you progressively show them that there may have been a reason why you behave that way that isn't like bedrock character personality trait, people will be willing to give you a chance to move and grow. And I always felt like that's kind of what it is. But in try for him, it was always about, you know, his wants, his needs, his goal, his outcome.
Yes. Yeah.
And that always breaks down eventually, unless you want to be president.
Yeah.
I said it. I meant it.
Okay, so you two believe that she was eventually in on it. Okay, I'm gonna have to watch that.
I don't even know if it was so much it was in on it as she started to have a growing awareness of what was happening.
Uh-huh. Like an intuitiveness, mm-hmm, of some sort.
Bingo.
Okay.
Bingo.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, deja vu can carry you really far if you listen to it. But I think after a while, she just started to have a growing awareness.
And so the question becomes, to what extent does this, how far does this growing awareness grow?
Right.
Because as these cycles continue to repeat, you know, what we're led to believe, just because human beings like symmetry, is that she's going to be more and more aggressive in not giving him opportunities to insert himself into her life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's how you get the shutdown. I mean, like, this, okay, have you ever, I do not recommend anyone do this, but have you ever jumped down the men's right rabbit hole and looked at some of these, you know, the techniques that they give for flirting and all that other stuff?
I'm ashamed to say this, And it's not because I had any actual belief. I just wanted to see how deep the rabbit hole went. So, yeah, I have scanned many a MRI site. I've been on the Roosh V site. And
you wanted to know. Star
Wars. Yeah, I needed to know how deep the dysfunction went. So, yes, I've been to a lot of those sites.
Yes, I have done the same thing, too. Very early on before it became the cancer that it is.
Yeah.
Like, I saw it grow, and I saw the evil that it was.
Fandom and the Gamergate stuff. And
yeah.
And just the general, you know, the great sense of entitlement. But the thing that I liked about this, and can we talk about how I would like someone to put Topher in some therapy, because he's getting a little too good at playing these characters.
He's a little typecast, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Ever since he played the creepy, low-key serial killer in Predators, I was like, oh, he's reaching his final form, and I think we should kill it.
Who, just like another one, Walter Goggins, who said, oh, maybe I should start doing some comedies. he needs to break out from that, yeah.
Yeah, he's really good at it.
But when you've got that creepy ass face, like, you remember, did you guys ever see Copycat with starring Sigourney Weaver and Harry Connick Jr.?
Yes.
So you remember when she's giving the talk in the college and she has them stand up and she says, at least this number of you, and she kind of goes through the checklist. Mm-hmm. The Bundy checklist.
It took me a while. I had to. Okay. Yes, I remember this.
Yeah. Movie. Topher is a checklist.
Yes, he is.
He doesn't. I mean, it's not his fault. Mm-hmm. From his face, the bone structure, his features, hell, even his hair color, his height, his build, how he chooses to dress himself. He is a walking, talking checklist.
He's Norman Bates.
I don't know if he's Norman Bates. He doesn't seem to have quite that many mama issues, but I don't know him personally, so he could be.
He's got the Norman Bates look.
Yeah, so if somebody is trying to go for a vibe, but he also looks like he'd be cool to have a beer with, maybe.
But
looks like he's that dude in the bar who says, bitch, I bought you a drink, don't you know you're my girlfriend now? So
maybe a serial killer is some, you know, ends
yeah.
up someone.
And let's be real. Let's be real. For all we know, we've all come in contact with someone who's trolling for a client, trolling for their next victim, and we just didn't ring all their bells. So they were just a nice, slightly awkward dude who gave you a ride home or held the door for you.
I've actually had that experience, but I won't share it at the moment.
We will have to talk offline about this because there's some stuff I don't want to talk about on the show. We'll talk offline.
Fair.
Yeah.
But that's what I liked about Try is the way that they did it. It kind of felt like he was going through the playbook that these guys who call themselves dating experts for men give guys. Mm-hmm. And every time he struck out on one, he'd come back with something else. But then he started to personalize his approach to her. And that's where you get the creepiness extra, because he starts to feel, I'm putting in all this effort. I'm remembering all of this stuff. I'm paying
attention. And he even said it out loud a few times to her. And it just made it even more creepier. And maybe this would bother me about that episode. Is like, I've known too many of these type of dudes.
That's because these type of dudes are everywhere. They're the only ones who don't know that they're these type of dudes. We know.
I mean, we talked about this yesterday, Ro. The way in which men are taught that relationships are innately transactional. Mm-hmm. He's playing the relationship like a video game. Again, it's not a coincidence that Gamergate was a huge component of this whole thing.
Right.
Because you see, you know, these people are seeing life as a path where you play it a certain way, you get to an end, you get certain achievements, mm-hmm. and the game is over and you win. That's the reason why it was so fucking pissed off with people about Mass Effect and the reaction to the end of the Mass Effect trilogy, because it did not end the way that gamers expected it to end, which is you win the game, you get the girl, you save the day, you become the king, the galaxy worships you. There is nothing in that game that indicated that there would be a happy ending to that entire series. But because we are so patterned to see things as transactional and that we are the winners.
Yeah.
It broke something
And that there's a way to circumvent consequences that you don't want to deal with and still win.
So they're supposed they're supposed to be a happy ending to a game about a bunch of alien races that have all committed genocide.
Yeah, because why not? But but Mass Effect was also one of the first games that from the very opening sequence, you made a choice and they made you stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you were stuck with it. I was like, I love choose your own adventure games, but guys have taken choose your own adventure to mean something other than it was ever intended in the books, and they bring it into the real world. I mean, like when I was in law school, there was a couple of case studies that we studied were about people whose lawyers were trying to put up not guilty by reason of mental defect or disease, and the basis of their claim had to do with the indoctrination of expectation for how they were supposed to be treated by the world due to video games, television, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, you jump down that rabbit hole, you're reading a whole bunch of psychobabble, but every once in a while you run into someone who's done one of those old school style tests about where people land on how they think about relationships and, you know, the expectation from it. And almost with a 90% guarantee across the board, guys fundamentally believe that they are allowed to have, to take, and to receive by right. Like there was this whole Adam's rib theory.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and I'm out. But that's where we are now in modern times, which is why Try was like brilliant for me. But other than that, if you go back into the who of you, he's like, are you present in your relationship? Like when Billy Porter gives that speech at the end, when he pops back in and says she's not talking about money, there's a reason she says it's not money. And she reads him he reads him for filth.
Because you see her as a problem to be solved.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And people as husks to be worn and discarded at your need.
At your need, yes.
And that is that. I love how these episodes talk to each other.
The only twist about the who of you was I thought he was going to jump into his girlfriend because she had the better career.
Oh no, I knew he was always jumping into the detective.
Mm-hmm. The detective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He wants to be a leading man, and he ain't got a leading man face.
And again, but it's the concept of the alpha male.
Yep. I always knew. I was like, as soon as they brought him in, first of all, he's fine, and we like him.
Yes.
And I refuse to look up any information about him in his real life because I need him to stay in his light-skinned perfectness until I die.
Okay. See, you understand me because one of my biggest pet peeves on Twitter is when I say so and so is fine, and everybody decides, well, you know what she did back in it. No, I don't.
No, I don't. And you're not gonna tell me today.
That's why I don't follow her.
Mm-mm.
Not on Twitter.
You gonna let me have my pretties. I'm keeping my pretties. I keep them in a nice little box. And I will set your world on fire. You're not gonna disturb my joy. Let me have my joy.
I will block you. I will block you.
But like Ethan Embry is another person who fits a version of the checklist when it comes to dudes and how they get down and how they behave. And I thought it was a brilliant juxtaposition between him and someone who's had earned fame and accolades and wasn't able to continue them, but also wasn't able to become memorable enough to then leverage the relationships he built. And when the way they started that episode with him trying to get a connection with the person behind the camera, and he's like, well, I'm sorry, you know, it's nice to see you again, but are you ready to do this? Because he doesn't remember him and he didn't matter. But mm-hmm. then the juxtaposition between this, you know, fine, upstanding, beautiful version of a man walking around in that coat, that coat hang really well on his shoulder. I'm just going to have a moment.
I got an extra bottle of water over here if you want it.
Shut up. I'm not quite parched. I'll make
it. That's dehydrated.
But like the cop, when he comes in, and I'm very deliberately not telling people names because I don't want to spoil all of the people who are in this series. They are very careful not to tell you everyone who's in every episode. And I thought that was also a brilliant move because it allows you to just let them be the character. So you've got this police detective who comes into the bank and he's clearly smart, but he's got something going on. his phone keeps ringing. So he's also kind of distracted, but he's very alpha. As soon as he walks in the room, people look to him. People are listening to him. They're following his direction. And I was like, yeah, wherever this goes, at the end of the day, he gonna snatch your body, sir. I hope you didn't like it too much.
Okay, so I was thinking of his ego because he just wanted to be recognized as an actor, as, you know, and be on the stage. Everyone knows him. And I thought he was going to snatch his girlfriend's career from her because she had that.
But he doesn't think she's better than him. And he doesn't think. Remember, as far as he's concerned, you know, this is like putting on a coat. So he just needed to put his talent in the right vessel.
In the right vessel. Like, okay.
So he convinced himself the only thing that was holding him back was he no longer had the profile and the look they wanted. So he stole it. Mm-hmm. He wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
No. And so man's bottom lip. Are you serious?
But, and this is why I liked Ovation as well, because not only the show, what's been brilliant about what they've done with a number of these shows is not only the narrative that we're watching with the main character, but what that narrative says about the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so again, when I kind of pushed back with you about, like, we don't give doctors the accolades that we give the artists, but to a certain extent we do, because people are willing. I mean, Ben Carson. There's a certain section of us that was willing to believe that because he was a brilliant neurosurgeon, he's brilliant.
But was that about him being a brilliant neurosurgeon, or was that about more of a community desire to celebrate Black achievement that they wanted? We have a tendency to hold people up with this belief that they are success is success for the entire group. And it's an old feeling. And he capitalized on it and was able to become notorious among white people because he, you know, he leveraged his down on his luck, build him up by his bootstraps and to get him set, which is some bullshit.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's complete and utter trash. He's a liar, but he was able to do that.
I'm from Maryland.
I know it's a lie. It's a whole ass damn lie.
It's also a bit of an empty vessel syndrome where we can just pin all our or project all our hopes and dreams on someone like Ben Carson.
And that was going to be the next question. That was the question I was going to give you as the pushback. So where do you draw the line between those two things? Like, this willingness to be able to see someone as the symbol of achievement for your society, I mean, for your community, and this willing and the way that you push a certain level of expertise on a person that they don't necessarily deserve as a way of achieving that.
Well, we also have this tendency to not make people stay in their lane. Bill Carson has a very, very specific skill set. Mm-hmm. He has a very specific kind of well, quite frankly, brilliance for as a surgeon. Mm-hmm. We gave him permission to extrapolate that into anything he can do, I can do better kind of thing.
I think
that's where we have to stop. I think that's why I like Ovation so much, because her sister knew she didn't have any talents, not to be celebrated the way that for celebrity.
Bingo. And that's the social criticism on the other end that I kept getting. That's what kept hooking me, is that in a way our society is built to give people accolades, you know, irrespective of their actual talent and their brilliance in a particular area. Our society has this tendency to want to mythologize people to the point where their actual talent is no longer relevant. It's not important. She could sing an entire song and be the best song that she's ever given in her career. That's not what people are responding to. They're responding to the magic,
the cult of personality.
Yeah. And that's the vantage point that I was coming from when we talked about that episode. you know, there was a part of me that was much more interested in what this narrative says about the rest of us than about the characters themselves. And that's not a slight on the story that was crafted around these characters. It was just where I got hooked.
Oh, no, I agree completely.
We also have a tendency in society to mythologize genius just simply because someone does this one thing well that is perceived as being genius, like being a neurosurgeon.
Or Kanye West.
Yes, or Kanye West. Instead of thinking of it just maybe they're very good, like a strong skill set. Like, for example, Michael Jordan or Kobe or LeBron are extremely excellent basketball players, okay? It does not necessarily all the time translate they're going to be excellent at all things. Look at Michael Jordan trying to play baseball, okay? Or business, you know, Kobe's done a lot of good things, but his business acumen is not the same level as, say, for example, LeBron or Jordan.
Huh? Wait, roll that back by me again.
He is not, as far as business goes, Kobe, not until very recently, but during his career in the NBA, he is not at the same level as, I would say, Jordan or LeBron.
Because he didn't do anything. He deliberately didn't do anything, which is his own. I get the point that you're making, but I think you've picked three really bad examples.
Okay, but I picked three bad examples. I was just trying to think of something that's just recent. It was on my top of my mind.
No, I only do that because as soon as you said Kobe, I was like, homie spoke four languages. What are we talking about? But
Kobe spoke four languages?
Yeah.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah. Like, I think the problem is I think you're right. But Kobe's genius is split along a very creative path, which he didn't give himself permission to follow until recently when he started doing the book for which he won, what was it, a Grammy? An Oscar?
The movie he won for an Oscar for documentary. Mm-hmm.
But then he also did a children's book, and then
Drew's book won a Grammy.
Yes. And then he had the foundation that he set up. He was more of a kind of a behind the scenes person. He wasn't about leveraging his brand. Well, he wasn't about leveraging his face for his brand, but he
I think that, I think that the analogy makes sense when you're looking at it from the standpoint of perceptions of these people.
The problem. Mm-hmm. She's right, because if you're only looking at the perceptions of these people and what their known talent base for is, everything else they do outside of that is a shock and a stun and gets evaluated at a different standard. But mm-hmm. we also give mm-hmm. them permission to still be great because they were great at this other thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now we consider everybody needs to be this kind of full tool person. Like, back in like old Hollywood, the Hollywood system, you had to be a triple threat. You had to sing, dance, and act. Mm-hmm. And they built a machine in order to guarantee the people who they wanted to throw their money behind could in fact sing, dance, and act. You know, it's like a lot.
And the people that were actually had real talent at all three of those things, that the people that were at the top of that hierarchy, they ran those people to the point of burning them out, because it really is a rarity,
right? And if you didn't come suited and booted, and they were skills you had to learn, the second you fell off, you know, maintaining your game, you got caught out. Mm-hmm. But they didn't care because they'd already gotten what they wanted from you, and it dawned on them, we only need a hot 16.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing happened in the music industry.
Yep, same thing happened in music.
And then once they figured out they could serialize the popularity of rap without actually having to delve into what is hip-hop, that phrase I just said literally became the executive phrase. We only need a hot 16.
Well, shit, it happened in pop music before, arguably before it happened in hip-hop.
Oh, the pop machine has been running since Judy Garland and Dorothy Dandridge. Well,
yeah, I meant rock pop, you know.
No, but I mean, that's, I do too, because think about it. After she did Somewhere Over the Rainbow and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and all those other musicals, and she revitalized the music,
mm-hmm.
where did you find Judy Garland? You found her on a stage at a one-woman show doing singing. Mm-hmm. And that model is what they grafted in to the pop model. So then you get the Britney, you get the Christina, you get the Mandy Moore, you get the Pink. Now, out of all of those, they can all carry a tune. Name me who can sing. Mm-hmm. Pink and Christina Aguilera.
Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, but then they tried to turn Christina Aguilera into a movie star.
They tried. She realized she couldn't do it, and that's why you don't see her.
But again, amen. But again, we impose this ability mm-hmm. to do things on people that aren't, that's not their lane. Like Madonna. Right. Like people giving Madonna countless chances. Like people giving Madonna countless chances to be in a movie and she can't act.
Yeah, I was like, you know, my favorite Madonna movie is
Who's That Girl?
I love the fact that she knew what I was going to say. This brings me joy now.
Because that's everyone's favorite Madonna movie. That's the one that really, it's just Madonna being Madonna. Mm-hmm. And that's why it works. Mm-hmm. And Madonna, the Madonna personality works, like from the 80s to the 90s. That personality works. That's her best personality. It's her best persona.
Because it's her.
Because it's her. It's authentic.
It's also problematic in that it pushes a certain, well, we all know what it is.
Mm-hmm. It pushes with a certain type, yes.
A certain edginess that people wanted to.
And tropes, yeah.
A certain edginess that white women wanted to emulate without actually getting their hands dirty. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
True.
They also really wanted a new Maryland. Ooh, did they?
Which is why Cyndi Lauper is always, I prefer her over Madonna anyways.
But
she didn't
get that. But that's what's crazy about it. Cyndi Lauper can sing. Cyndi Lauper can actually also act. She also,
yes, she can.
She's also an amazing songwriter and, you know, stage production person from behind the scenes.
And she does not get enough accolades as she should.
Because she controls her own genius.
That's right.
In a non-superficial way, because you could argue that Madonna has control of her entire image, but just not in the way that it's not a real empowerment. It's not.
Oh, it's a brand. No. Madonna's a brand. And what's funny is I've seen old footage. She's a brilliant dancer, and it sucks that she got hurt and couldn't.
Yeah, she got hurt like really bad.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks that the thing that she does better than anybody else that was trying to do what she did, she couldn't have anymore because she got hurt. But she also recognized and realized that she had an opportunity because she had a look
mm-hmm.
that they wanted. And she's like, I'll give you what you want to get what I want.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, I think like if Cyndi Lauper now with the tools that are available would be so much bigger than Madonna and a lot of artists right now.
Would she though?
Just
because would she though?
I think she would, because she would came out of the SoundCloud stuff, the YouTube stuff, the Twitter stuff, the social media stuff. Like, she's very savvy. If you watch those interviews or read those articles that she does, she would be much bigger, I think. But that lane would not be available for her if she didn't exist already. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I can see that. But everything that we're talking about here, how we circled back around to Ovation, kind of talks about the thing that I liked best about Downtime.
That episode was a struggle for me, I'll admit.
It was a struggle for me as
really?
Well. And I don't, the tech critique of it, I absolutely understood. I'm just not, because I'm not part of that community. I just don't know about the trans existence from that messaging from that episode.
But was it that's the messaging you got? I got it more.
I didn't get that at all.
I didn't get that. I got it more. I felt this was like some Second Life stuff. And
okay.
And this whole idea that people have that all they need to do to live their, you know, that escapism is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea that they gave, because this isn't a new concept. If somebody is like asleep, doing some Total Recall type stuff, going somewhere and letting someone give them some way that they can live a different life. And watching this thing has gone horribly awry. Version of that and the decisions that had to be made for that, I enjoyed it because I feel like it still goes into this. I've found a way and I achieved, like, because the character, she's a badass. She just got promoted.
Yes, she is.
She's earned all these things. She's great. She's excited, only to find out everything that she knows is wrong. And like, if there's not a world in which I'm not going to watch Marina Bracciari act because she's brilliant, but the character Michelle has reached the penultimate in her career. And just as soon as she's achieved it, she finds out nothing is real. Mm-hmm. Everything around her is a lie.
I guess because I feel like it, maybe it's the point, maybe I've seen this story too many times.
Oh yeah, we've seen this a lot.
And it just didn't hit for me because of that. Like, I mean, I will watch Marina Baccarin do, I'll watch her pick her nose. I'll be nasty.
Okay. Okay, look.
The woman is breathtaking, and she is a great actress.
It's annoying that even the bottoms of her feet look like her skin is really damp.
Bruh.
So I understand, but I'm not watching Marina pick her nose. I watch her wash her hair. She can sing for me, even if she can't carry a damn tune. But I got to draw the line. Just short of Drew DeVine.
Notice how you said just short.
It's just short.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like centimeters, right? Like,
mm-hmm. But I'm gonna pause before we get there. I'm not gonna watch that part. Skip ahead 15-30 seconds.
That just means it's only a matter of time.
No, sir. I have editing out of your software. I'll be cutting that part of the clip out. But it's like this idea of like she's done everything she's had to do to achieve, and I loved the subtle way that they set it up with the whole woman man dynamic. I'm about to get promoted. Oh shit, he's not. I gotta be one of the boys right quick with that joke she told at the beginning.
Yes, the joke. Yes.
And I was ecstatic that that's not the direction that the episode was going, because I thought it was going to be about that workplace type thing. And I was like, please don't do that. Mm-hmm. Please don't do that. I don't want to see that. I'm tired of that.
So, okay. So, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I immediately thought that maybe I didn't enjoy the show because, you know, my maleness didn't allow me to relate to it in that way. And so, you know, it's interesting that you said, I wish they had gone a little further with that.
Just a little, because mm-hmm. I felt like they jumped too quickly into us watching her world fall apart.
Yes, because there was like subtle things in the background that was happening. You're like, okay, there's something going on, but they could have took a little while, like have her be in her workplace, because you can see that she was, you know, she was going to get this promotion. Everyone is praising her. And then you had that little kind of work dialogue thing. But I think it did fall apart just a little too soon. I would have liked to have this character breathe a bit more.
Yeah.
Before we got the disconnect to where she's real, but she's not real. There's another person, but it's a personality that was built by this person in the game. So is she that person in the real world, or is she this person in this reality, a mixture of the two? I mean, that was the question.
Yeah, I like the fact that I didn't have to, you know, the dissonance between who the real person was and who uh-huh. Michelle was, we got. I like the fact that they always said Michelle. Because again, you know, I like that it played into the, you know, don't forget, don't ever break character.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it raised a question for me about what makes us who we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is it, and maybe this is where it kind of messed with people and they felt like it was playing too much into like, you know, gender non-conforming areas. But mm-hmm. I didn't get that in the sense, maybe it's because the, you know, the gamer in me, or the lapsed gamer in me, and the lover of sci-fi in me went immediately to the idea of this is a multi massive online role-playing game.
Oh no, I also got that too, but I just, because it was like a virtual existence, I was thinking of just how the Matrix was supposed to be kind of like that. From what the Wukwasi's sisters have said about how they were trying to do the Matrix. So it just, I had to start that in my mind. Like, I can see how someone can perceive that, but also I could see it just from a gamer's perspective at this being an online world. And just from in general, gamers have for the longest time from tabletop or something like that, played with gender roles and gender dynamics and stuff like that.
Yeah, but this was a choice. Michelle made,
this was an actor.
You know, in the Matrix, that particular character died in the wrong body and screamed, "Not like this, dear God, not like this," you know?
And yes,
that was about loss of choice and being trapped. Michelle, the personality that became this character chose Michelle. Mm-hmm. They put themselves into this personality. Everything that made Michelle real came from the person who embodied Michelle. So I don't think that there was a cognitive dissonance in that way, or there was some kind of confusion. I was actually happy that they didn't put that into it, because I thought this would have been a horrible setting for them to try to even approach that type of subject, because that's disrespectful and dangerously bad. So I like the fact that they didn't go there. I could see if you kind of had the whole idea of the Matrix and, you know, being stuck in the Matrix in the back of your head. I could see how that could be a thing. But this more felt like it really felt like game maintenance, you know, and I was
okay.
And I never really fell outside of that. So I kind of got stuck up in the idea of, what do you do if you don't have anything to go back to? Do you continue to live the lie? If the lie is giving you your only chance at life? And maybe you know.
And I think I just felt like they could have.
It didn't breathe. You're right. It didn't breathe enough. It needed to breathe more.
Yeah. And it was just a struggle, because I wanted it to be good. I wanted it to be something fresh.
Better.
Or something.
I liked it for what it was. It was brilliantly acted. I loved the way they played it out. I don't believe that they gave us enough to really hook it in. And I think part of that is, I think it was too soon. Like, for the theme that they were giving for the season, I think downtime, I think downtime shouldn't have been the second episode.
It should have played later.
Yeah, I think it would have played better if it had played later, because they had built more into us having an idea of they were playing with these kind of existential, like, issues. Who am I? What am I? What matters to me? What makes me? And I think downtime is in the wrong place. If it either needed to be the first thing out of the gate, because everything built from that, but downtime felt like it was a step back after Meet in the Middle.
Yeah. And it was a little jarring and off-putting. I see what they were trying to do. It just did not for me coalesce. Yeah. It really didn't. I did like the whole skater developers tracking her down kind of thing. I thought it was funny. Yeah. But there was beats in there where they could have, like, trimmed it a little bit and spent more on Michelle, the character. Yeah. Even more with when the wife showed up. Like, having more of that dynamic there and having more about her struggle or her character or that dynamic. Or just a little bit more of her early on, so we get a more idea of who Michelle is.
Yeah, we needed to see her interact more.
And I think, I mean, you'd have to be delicate with this. I think there was a way to sort of get into why the person would choose to play a character of the opposite sex, because that's something that's commonplace, and, you know, we've already talked about it. Something that's commonplace in gaming, whether it be tabletop or video games. I think there's a way to get at it without getting into, like, problematic tropes about trans existence.
No, I think, come on, let's be real. We all know that when it comes to making the character game, the female characters play a role.
Femship. Period.
Yep.
Period.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it like it's a fact, because I feel it is.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you about it. Laura Croft and Femship.
Pretty much. But I really feel like, to a certain extent, that if they had given us a little bit more, let us see her, if they hadn't kept it so tightly to the promotion and what happened after the promotion, and they jumped immediately into this, you know, things going awry, if they had just given us something a little laterally, or maybe another encounter with somebody before and after downtime starts, so we got that juxtaposition, so we could see what she was really struggling with. Mm-hmm. I liked the fact that they kind of played it. So if you just sign this waiver.
Oh, the terms and conditions yeah. thing? Mm-hmm. I was like, that is such a tech yeah. thing. And that's a, it also goes to the themes about how, you know, particularly, I guess you can say white men, try to get out of their fuck ups. Like, if you just sign this piece of paper, then this is not really a problem at all.
We totally should have left this in beta before we went this wide.
Yeah.
But since we did, yes. you know, there's been you know, some shit's happened.
Some shit's happened. But yeah.
I think maybe because I kept it in the gamer, like, just that narrow, like, I enjoyed it for what it was. I just felt like maybe it should have been the first episode, but it's not strong enough to make you want to watch another episode. I really feel like they didn't know where they wanted to put downtime. And I feel like the second spot was wrong because everything after downtime is strong. Mm-hmm. But downtime doesn't really feed in. Well, it kind of feeds into Among the Untrodden.
Yeah.
But not. I don't know.
I think that's a better.
If you think about a placement of like. Your societal placement, if you think about that, like where you perceive yourself to be, maybe, but if you took downtown out, I don't think you really miss a beat throughout the rest of the season as far as scenes go.
I think the entire season is stronger without downtime. Downtime sticks out. It seems out of place.
The fact that we're having a whole conversation about the things that it could have done or should have done is the problem.
Right.
It was a struggle for me. It was a dud for me. It was just
I liked it, but I wanted more. I felt like the story started in the last 2 minutes, and I hate it when I feel like a second and third act are rushed, and I hate it when I feel like this third act is that should have been the first, and then they should have rewritten everything after it. Mm-hmm. But I like the concepts they played with. The lawyer in me was like, see, this is why you don't just be agreeing to them EULAs in games. Find out you can mediate in Papua New Guinea.
And see, the part of me that studied computers was like, oh, yeah, of course they released a half-ass application.
Okay, I think South Park like addressed this issue 20 years ago in a cartoon format for everybody.
But I mean, one of the reasons I like it is because we're having the conversation we're having right now, not just the parts of where it could have been better, but just the basic idea. Yeah. If you found out you couldn't go back to your corporeal being, would you decide to stay an NPC?
Yeah. Depends on what NPC I am. How badass would
I
be?
Even that question brings up a bunch of juicy questions that I want answered. And it may not be in the lane of this episode, but they're far more interesting questions than the episode itself. Like, you know, then you get into what is existence?
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek Picard was, we're going to have to deal with that in season 2.
And what is the world? What is the universe? Is this video game life just as valid as your quote unquote corporeal existence?
Right.
Yeah.
Again, and how do we not know that we're already not in a video game?
There's always that theory about being a hologram.
I refuse to believe that this is a video game I would get stuck in.
So you don't believe we're at a hologram?
You thought it was a good video game before you got stuck in it. And then it released a bunch of bad DLC. Okay.
Look, I told someone the other day because they said they felt like I was an alien. I said, then at this point, I need to call the mothership for a pickup and or a patch because this is some bullshit. I refuse to believe that this is the video game that I am stuck in for my life. You can't make me do it. I refuse. But all the stuff that we're being silly about right now is the questions about life and that I liked that downtime raised. And it also reminded me that not every single episode of the original Rod Serling, you know, Twilight Zone felt like it needed to have this deep angst. Some of them mm-hmm. left you feeling a little conflicted, or they left you feeling like you didn't get what you needed from the episode, and then you talk it through and you end up talking your ass into what the episode
okay It hits me. You appreciate this episode for the exact same reason why Blade Runner is one of my favorite movies.
So Chris and Rod didn't ruin it for you?
No, I actually, they read a letter on that episode. That was my letter.
Oh, was it now?
So it was an email. So what I appreciate about Blade Runner as a movie is not that it's not a good movie, but I appreciated the conversation that it created and the fact that pretty much any show or movie that has AI in it is having an active conversation with Blade Runner.
Yes.
If you look at any show that has AI in it, they are talking to Blade Runner because that movie is so flawed, but it is so provocative that you almost have to have that conversation with Blade
Runner. Have you heard the conversation Chris and I had about Blade Runner?
No.
Okay, you should probably. It pops up in the middle of one of the recent episodes. I think it's in like one of our rewatches. I think it might actually be Judge Dredd.
Send it to me. When you figure out where you had it, send it to me and I'll
find that episode.
Because
I love Blade Runner.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. And I am deeply, deeply conflicted about that movie. And especially as I've gotten older and the whole Sean Young thing. But I figured out that I like the movie not because of the movie. I like the movie because of what the movie tried to do.
Yeah, and let's be real. There's never going to be a time when I'm not rooting for the slave uprising to succeed.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Which is why Humans is a completely underrated show until it fell off a cliff at the very end of the last season.
But I think if they had been given the opportunity to come back, they would have gotten it together.
Preach.
I'm sorry, I got some low key bitterness about them not investing in Humans.
I am angry.
And by low key bitterness, I had to go and delete an entire thread because I went back and read it later and realized it rose to the level of communicating a threat.
Two shows I am still angry about, Caprica and Humans.
Okay, we are not going to discuss the fact that I did not get my satisfaction from Caprica. Woo, Jesus.
See, man, we're going to have two more shows together because like you speak to my soul because I am still angry that they canceled Caprica.
What you trying to say?
Caprica? Caprica would... See, Caprica was a way to kind of resolve some of the issues I had for Battlestar Galactica, because I was really, really into Caprica. I was like, okay, this is what I was getting for towards the end here, and they canceled it. Sci-fi is my new Fox. Fox, you know, for a while there has some really good genre shows, but they just kept freaking canceling them.
Almost
like
Human.
Almost Human. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Almost Human. Lucifer, which is now on Netflix. They fucked up Sleepy Hollow.
May it rest
I will
in
never
peace.
Forgive them. Rest in peace.
And as much criticism as it got at the time, Minority Report, I think, had
potential. They just needed four more episodes to get their shit together.
Yep. Yeah.
At that point, I was off the Fox train. I think I was only watching one Fox show because I was like, "You're not going to do this to me anymore."
And New Amsterdam could have had it together too. They have had a season. They have had a show a season that, if they had given it time to find its audience and to grow, would have been a beast for them. They could have
By season three, Minority Report would have been a great show.
I honestly believe with the people that they were contemplating bringing in to write season two, they'd got it together by season two. They just needed to let them go. They just needed to let them ride. But again, almost every single thing that we are talking about comes from Philip K. Dick. Do you realize that? Mm-hmm. You do realize that?
Yes.
And
how about Space Above and Beyond? That really old. That could have been like a game changer, which it should have been what. You know, could have watched some things, which Battlestar did.
I keep telling people the problem is us. See, I whenever I see something that is science fiction or fantasy, I automatically shift into Star Trek mode. Give me three seasons.
Oh, I don't. I say give me five episodes.
Nah, I am. Give me three seasons, and I will be patient for three seasons. By the third season, if the show hasn't picked up, then it just wasn't. You got to give these types of shows time to breathe.
Okay, what I mean by five episodes is whether or not I'm watching your show in real time or if I'm DVRing it so I can watch it on my time, not if I'm going to watch it.
Okay.
I don't mean I'm five episodes and I'm out. It's five episodes. And am I giving you my time in real time? Like, am I setting aside time to watch your show as it comes on? Am I watching it live?
Because I did that with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the first season. I watched about five episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and said, okay, I am going to watch this show. I know I'm going to watch the show. I can't watch it week to week. Let me wait until mid-season, and then I'll pick it back up. And I went on a cruise. And I binged up until the part where it intersects with Captain America, the first the Winter Soldier. I watched all of those episodes on a cruise, and I was like,
That's a dangerous binge. I mean, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. caught its stride. One, it was ABC, not Fox or sci-fi. They caught its stride faster than other shows. But there's a show that I got hooked on that kind of reminds me a little bit of what's happening with The Twilight Zone and what I really dig about it. But it also bleeds into other areas is Tales from Elsewhere. Are y'all watching that?
I've watched a couple of episodes. I haven't finished it yet.
Is that on Prime?
No, it's on, what is it, AMC?
Is that the guy from How You Met Your Mother? The really tall dude?
It's his show.
Okay, I've seen the commercials for it, but I have not seen it yet.
In between not being able to watch things like The Outer Limits and Twilight Zone, I got hooked on really left of center documentaries about cults. And there was one about the scavenger hunt that was happening in San Francisco. That was looking for Elsewhere. And it's actually the basis of the show Tales from Elsewhere. And I'll see if I can find the documentary. If I can, I'll send it to you. But it feeds into all of the different, you know, half a step out of the focus. Is this real? What's not real? You know, crisis players versus real situations, conspiracy theories, who's the real enemy type stuff. And
reptilian aliens.
just short of that. It goes in a slightly weirder direction because it stays with the humans. But it all came down.
Okay.
It kind of came down to this concept of what, you know, where's the divide and, you know, what's behind the and Andre 3000 is in it. And he plays an extremely uptight, paranoid, brilliant character. And I really felt like when I was watching it, that they had found something unique. But I don't think they're going to let it live. Because the thing that
happens.
Yeah, but because the thing that doesn't necessarily work about it is a little bit of the slow drag that we only give shows like Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits and Tales from the Dark Side and Campfire Tales permission to do. And they're doing it in kind of like a dark offshoot fantasy semi scavenger hunt world. We don't usually give those types of shows permission to tell us stories that way.
It's kind of like that really old sci-fi miniseries when they were doing miniseries, The Lost Room. Yes, like that was supposed to be a continuation, but they didn't allow it to continue. But it was like a really excellent slow drag. Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of what it is. And to say all of this is because that was the thing that made me watch Among the Untrodden and then turn right around and watch it again. That and Sheila in the Spades.
Oh, okay. I need to watch that. Sheila in the Spades. Okay. But Among the Trodden is my favorite. By far, besides Eight, the squid one, even though it scares me. Like, I was not expecting that ending because it was building like the character was getting gaslit the whole time. And I was like, are you going to give in to your gaslighter? And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. Don't do that thing. Don't do that thing. I'm not giving away the ending, but don't do that thing. And yeah. And I was like, I was shocked. And I had to pick up my jaw and watch that episode again.
You know what? This wasn't anything that I thought.
No. I admit, because I was watching this one as I was working. You know, I had a moment where I was working on something that was really repetitive and I could, you know, split my attention in that way. And so, I was like, okay, I know how this is going to go. No,
No. I was like, I'm sorry, I need to pay attention.
No. Yeah, and then I had to stop, and I had to stop working, and had to go back and watch this episode again. Because I was like, no, wait a minute, when did it make a hard left?
Yeah, I was like, is this going to be some low-key, you know, craft versus...
Yes, that's what I was thinking. There was like a craft vibe to this, and then I was like, "Oh, it's gonna be this kind of thing because that something happened."
Some deep ass Heather's action.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yes,
and I was like, "I'm here for it." And then when it took the left, and I refuse to spoil anything about Among the Undrawn, so we're just gonna talk around the subject. When it took its left turn, and you started to realize, "Oh, wait a minute." She's still trash, but she's not the trash I thought she was. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, huh. And when it got to the end and it resolved, I immediately hit rewind at the beginning.
Yeah.
I didn't even let Jordan Peele talk, do the final talk out. I immediately rewound to the beginning.
And I'm not that kind of person that likes to guess plots. Like, I enjoy watching things, even if I know sort of know where it's going to go, I like turning my brain off and just going along for the ride. So, you know, normally I try to not to be surprised about these things. No, this wasn't me trying to turn my brain off. Like, I was legitimately like, what the hell just happened? I got to watch this again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one was like... It had like three or four different things that it could have been, and it just kept going left. It just kept going left. It kept totally going somewhere different. And when you finally get to that end, it's like you have to rewatch it, and then you start seeing some of the subtleties to the episode all along. And it was really, I was just very impressed by both the actors. And at first, I thought the actress in it, she kind of looked like, why am I blanking her name from Clueless?
At least
the main girl from Clueless.
Alicia
Silverstone. Yeah, she looked like a very young Alicia Silverstone.
I can see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was like, is that her kid? Because she would be about the right age, but no, that's not who that is. But I was like, it had all these kind of like 90s craft, all the teenage tropes, and it was just going so completely different. At the same time, there were certain things in it. It's like, oh yeah, a teenager would do that if they had this particular ability. Yes, they would do that. Completely do that. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just very good.
I
was impressed.
I didn't think anything was heavy-handed. I love the way they entered in. I love the way they entered out. I love the muted palette that they gave for what it looked like, mm-hmm. and that kind of, you know, semi old retro sci-fi television show feel that it had. And then the moments where it kind of popped into almost 4K.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the acting was top shelf. I hate them little bastard children. And
yeah. I felt those mean girls. I felt every word they used.
It's a very interesting transition to go through. Like, I've been watching, because I was also binged Hannah this week. And
that's what I'm doing when you get off the phone.
Oh, no, this is not spoilers at all. But there are moments, because, you know, any type of show where teenagers are the central characters, you know, I'm at the age now where I'm like, where the fuck are your parents?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, this was
Yes.
Or yeah. why are your parents letting you be like this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or like, where are the adults? Where is the teacher? Who is the home supervisor for this
room?
I
say that because every time I watch these type of shows, it just hits me like a brick. Like, you're old now.
Yeah.
I'm not old.
And then you have to take a pause and remember, like, oh yeah, I used to behave that way, or I knew people who behaved that way. I was friends with people who behaved that way.
Or I used to watch these movies, and that is just an accepted critique of that genre. Like, the parents are never there.
Never there.
I got to the point, I'm looking at this, and I know I'm old, but I'm not old that way. I'm old in the you never would have survived my house way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You had to prepare to be having the ability to use hands if you were going to keep that behavior going.
You'd have got married in our backyard. We live in the woods, man. We just told mama you ran away. We'd have cleared out your room and sold all your shit. You never would have survived.
Oh God, that was a threat. That was such a threat. Oh, I had to pack up my stuff one time. Oh God, no. Okay. But anyways, yes. This was a good episode, yeah. I really enjoyed it. I think there's just like one episode we haven't talked about yet.
A Human Face.
Yeah, I didn't like that one. Even though I liked the actors in it, I didn't like this one.
I felt like it buried the lead a little too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't dislike it. I thought the acting was fantastic. I wish the point hadn't been what it was. I wish they had been going somewhere else with it.
What part did you not like? Oh, sorry, you're about to get right into that.
It's fine. Prompt me. It's okay. But I feel like it was because when they started really getting this is a family that's lost their child. And they talk around the problems in their relationship and how they talk about that child and what happened to that child. And I was really fascinated by the slow pull out and breaking down of what was wrong between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And then you throw their, the question is, would it matter? Does the face of your invader matter? Well, of course it matters. You know, like you go gently to that good night, you skip down the street or you run and screaming. But I thought it was more about the difference in the dynamics of how people process emotion. And again, it goes a little bit back to that whole, the nature of relationships and the purpose of them and what, whether it's partnership, or if it's transactional, is there a dominant partner? Is there, is there a submissive partner? The difference between being submissive and subservient, where's the line? Mm-hmm. When it was talking about all those different elements and you started to get that, and they were doing some real good parent digs because I was really having some mommy and daddy are fighting moments. And then it turned to the creature in the basement.
Yeah. If they had kept maybe the creature more hidden, if you will, like Jaws-like, that whole dynamic about the what if of dealing with their issues and there's also this problem in the basement, I think that would have been a better episode. Like if they had all this dynamic about what was going on with them and then they either came to some resolution and then dealt with what was down in the basement because whatever was in the basement wasn't really the issue, I think that would have been a better episode.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that the invasion part of this is sort of tacked on. So I innately like stories where it's a play on some sort of an invasion.
Yep.
Because I think invasions say more about us as humans than they do about our invaders, because, that's just what it is. I just think it was tacked on and it didn't have any, like you two said, it didn't have any role in this particular story.
Well, it wasn't that it didn't, for me anyway, not to speak for anyone else here. It felt like they made too much of an abrupt jump. Mm-hmm. Like when they had the scene in the bathroom where she's totally glitching out and trying to figure out how do I connect with the people who are behind this door. And, you've got Chris Meloni's character, and I love him, and he's typecast. And I don't know if it means he needs therapy. But I don't like how easily he's a little too comfortable with playing the kind of guy he plays. And I know it's because his body shape and his energy, and he's super aggro, and he's a different kind of alpha, but also the same kind of, falling into that niche. So I really like the fact that they played against a much softer energy from also, a full tool actress who doesn't get nearly enough respect for what she does. And it's because she decided to be a blonde, and I blame her, and I'm holding it against her because she makes an amazing redhead and brunette, but whatever. And the dynamic that was developed between them and developed between the creature that was clearly, in their house. And Mm-hmm. And his hardline angle, if we have to stick with reality, we have to hear in the us versus them versus, you know, she's on the other side of, you know, but this is an opportunity. This is an opening. This is a chance. And there was the one moment when it got at the end where he was like, you know, but if we open ourselves up to that motion, if we love, they win. And I was like, damn it. Why did you have to say it out loud? Like, I was perfectly okay with the way that they were leading them down the primrose path, that this was clearly they were being invaded and taken over. But I wish they had left that in the, like, off to the side. So there was this moment where they just made too much of an abrupt shift. And I fell out of enjoyment with A Human Face. And there then it was over.
There you go.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, so if I have to pick my least favorite episodes, I enjoyed Downtime more than I enjoyed In Human Face, but I enjoyed Try more than I enjoyed Downtime. So those are my three least favorite episodes, because we only talked about A Small Town in passing, but I'm going to tell you right now, if I have a secret room that has a replica of anywhere, everyone who lives in where I'm queen of all this survey is going to be happy. And, you know,
yeah, I didn't, with that one, I didn't think he thought big enough, to be honest. And then he went too big.
He should have done what his wife did. His wife wanted to be the caretaker of this town. So she became the mayor. So no one questioned who was doing the thing.
Right.
And that felt like a failing in this story.
He should have done like one fix, and then he would have been like, oh, I was the one who did it. And then been like, I'm running for mayor.
Or basically, he could have just run for mayor.
Or that too.
And it, and it would have been all, it would have been a good cover.
I feel like I need to step in and continue what my wife has continued, and to celebrate her and keep her legacy alive. I want to take care of this town and do it the way that she would have.
But see, then the manufacturer conflict wouldn't be there.
But we still would have gotten the manufacturer conflict because of who was cast to play the bad guy.
Yeah, because the bad guy would be like, well,
because then it really,
look at me.
Yeah, it really would have been about, look at me and my idea of the future. This could have come down to the race for mayor. Mm-hmm. And then you had the ideas of what was happening with this young boy and how he was getting treated and how they kept trying to scapegoat him. And I know that
I was getting really uncomfortable with that.
Like, we either going to talk about the fact that you're picking on this mixed race boy, or are we going to talk about the fact that you are picking on him because he's young, and but you need to do something with this. So I didn't like the unresolved nature of that. And I didn't like how they were building up to a mob mentality, because I felt like they built it around the wrong thing. And if they really wanted to build it about what happens when you bring people together and the solidarity that's necessary in order for a community and a people to thrive, irony right now. So, hey, everybody who doesn't want to wear a mask to the pandemic, please go watch A Small Fucking Town. But the other part of it, I really felt like there was so much more that they could have done with this if they had just rearranged it. Because then when it got down to the town and like the bad guy's like, yeah, we can do everything. Could you imagine if that had really been the energy, that they had kept that energy for this whole episode? If this became the secret he had to keep?
Yeah. Yeah, like I said earlier, like it seemed like the most family friendly-ish, and I think that's why it didn't go the way it's supposed to go.
I don't feel like it needed to be any darker than it was to get that. But again,
Tarantula.
I told you, I'm not okay with that big ass spider. That's not a solution, y'all. Spiders are never the solution.
Or the meteor.
I ain't got no problem with the meteor dropping on that ugly ass car. Now the car is beautiful. What he painted it and how he tricked it out was trash. But I have a problem with meteor. But I can't get with you if you want to. I might have arachnophobia. I don't know, but maybe, because I was very opposed to him as soon as the spider showed up. But like it.
So you all may not agree with me on this, but the ring part, as the resolution was kind of cheap to me.
It was such a cheat.
Cheesy.
Such a cheat.
Yeah. It was
really cheap.
I agree. It was a complete cheat.
Knowing that, but I almost wanted them to have the town tilted.
Oh, you wanted a full earthquake. You wanted to see the town tilt.
I wanted to see the town tilt. I wanted to see like the mountains up. And it's like this weird phenomenon where like all of a sudden the land shifted and this everything was tilted. Yeah, that was just me. It's like, well, everything else was real, but you couldn't tilt the land. That was the other thing that brought it.
I can give you that one.
Yeah, it's like you should have tilted the land, and then all these people had to show up, and then the stupid
one. I just feel like the messages that they were trying to send with that one would have been better received if they had kind of not tried to be so straightforward about it. And it made him seem more petty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Than he needed to be.
Far more petty than he needed to be. And that bothered me too. You know.
So does anyone else have anything else to say about the Twilight Zone?
Okay, I think it's worth a watch. Go ahead, P.
I completely agree. Watch this season. I have one small, petty little complaint. If you're gonna bring, and it's not just Twilight Zone. I need everybody to understand what I'm saying here. If you're gonna get Billy Porter and put him on your show, the man is a national treasure. Give him his things. I don't want to see Billy Porter as a side character in anybody else's show anymore. I need Billy Porter. Okay. I just want to have this conversation with everyone.
I didn't hate how they used Billy Porter because I think that role was essential to the story, and I don't think it would have worked if they had tried to have anybody's energy other than his.
And I'll give you all of that.
But I would have really enjoyed it if the story had been built around his shop. So I agree with you.
I'm just saying.
I, from the previews, thought he was going to be in an entire episode.
Yes.
I felt a little bamboozled.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure that that was the last thing I said because I didn't want it to derail, you know, all the great things that we have to say about the show because it deserves it. But I need people to start giving Billy Porter his things.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you.
So I agree with you too. So, but you, Paris, you probably wouldn't be good with my idea of fan casting of if they were ever to bring Q back, that Billy Porter would make a great Q.
Oh my God, Q is not a side character. That would be brilliant.
Well, I mean,
why would I have a problem with that?
I mean, he's a bit. I don't know if they'll give him enough of his time on the TV.
Q had whole story arcs.
Q is not a side character.
No, Q is.
Okay.
I am bound for that.
But that was my thinking is if they were ever to cast a Q, because John Delanis is, you know, he's up there like with Prince Banner, he's a little bit older there. Billy Porter as a Q. I felt he would be amazing there. He's the right level of camp and villainous and humor and gravitas for that character.
CBS.
And wit.
All right,
and
charm. CBS, make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Make it happen. I know you listen to our shows.
And if you don't, you should. I think Twilight Zone season 2 is a must watch. I had far more episodes. I enjoyed all the episodes, but I have some real standout favorites. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth a watch. I think you shouldn't listen to anybody else. I think a lot of people miss some of the point, and I think a lot of people are not getting over the fact that there's never going to be a show like Rod Serling's Twilight Zone. But I am absolutely enjoying Jordan Peele's.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think people don't realize that if Rod Serling couldn't make the show he really, truly wanted to make, they probably were not going to like it.
That man was so radical.
I don't think people realize how fundamentally radical he was. He was more radical than Gene Roddenberry or some of these other sci-fi people that people laud. He was way out there.
I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna keep it 100% real because that's another one of those shows that I sort of play in the background while I work. A lot of people that are talking about how this show doesn't stack up to the Twilight Zone did not watch the first couple of seasons of the Twilight Zone.
Nope. Or the last season.
The Twilight Zone did not stack up to the Twilight Zone.
people forget the thing that made the Twilight Zone were the standout episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones that got it into syndication to where everybody saw all the rest. Not a lot of people. I mean, also, you have to remember there was less things to watch on TV. So the night that the Twilight Zone came on, that was the Twilight Zone's night on TV. So the consistency level that was necessary from episode to episode had a much, much broader range that it could run. I think that these two seasons have a very tight, and they're very on theme from beginning to end, even if they have their ups and downs. But I don't feel like they have any more downs than the original Twilight Zone. So I agree with you.
Yep. Yep.
I think what, out of the 10 episodes, only two were meh?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty good batting average.
And again, the first season was really uneven. But you have to let these shows grow.
And I did. I think the episodes I liked out of the first season were not the ones anybody else liked. But I have embraced my weirdo, and I just go with it. But I also like the fact that I didn't like all the same episodes that everybody else liked. So I got to have some really interesting conversations with people
mm-hmm.
about what they liked about the shows.
Mm-hmm.
What the Twilight Zone does. Everyone has a favorite Twilight Zone episode, but it's never you're not going to find very many people that agree exactly. on the same ones. And that's what makes an anthology right. so great. And that's what these are. These are anthology series right. shows. They're not shows.
Right. But, you know, I don't know. I think they made a better decision to drop all the episodes at once. I think Twilight Zone season one would have been better if we had had control of how fast or how slow we watched. I understood what they were trying to do episodically with respect to building the brand of the CBS All Access Network.
Mm-hmm.
But
I also don't think they had much of a choice with dropping because of production stuff. Like, I don't think they could have milked this through the summer.
They could have done like they did with season one and just released an episode every Thursday.
I'm glad they didn't either. I was glad that they dropped it all at once.
I think that's what hurt season one, because this is a binge show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm enjoying Snowpiercer as a one by one by one. Now, yes. I can say that having seen all of the episodes, including the finale.
I hate you.
But I knew when I was screening it, oh, I could watch this one by one. This is totally something I could watch one by one, right? But it was my choice at that point. And I think that if season one Twilight Zone had been people's choice, how many they watched at a time, it would have found its audience better. And certain episodes would have gotten talked about at the same, you know, up and down ebb and flow wavelength, instead of everybody being concentrated on talking about the same episode at the same time until the next one was available.
Yeah, just looking at the IMDb stuff, the rankings, like, it has changed since its release. Like, stuff has gone up as far as, you know, ratings and reviews, and people putting their reviews out as people are watching this season. And I do think it benefits from much better from a binge than episode by episode. And I hope the next season is the same thing whenever we get that in 2055.
the 10 of us that are left that haven't been killed off by COVID.
Yeah. Because remember, Parrish, I use my wish to have the top scientists and the top men make sure that Star Trek Strange New Worlds comes out. That's the only show that's allowed to come out. That's the only one. All the scientists that were inspired by Star Trek are working right now.
They're all busy.
But make sure that the production, the actors, everything is done. Sanitized, cleaning. They got the robots, the sprays, the mist, everything, the gels.
And hopefully I'll be one of the last 10 human beings left on Earth when it comes out and I can watch it.
Oh, I'm surprised.
Oh, I'm sorry, Parrish. I have a very large family, so no.
First of all, you're going to have to increase the number for 10 because I'm going to survive. So we're going to need to make room for more than 10.
Yeah. This is not the little door from Titanic, okay? We're all going to fit.
I mean, we know who's not making it. That's what we should say. We know who's not.
Yes. Yeah. We know who's not going to make it. But yes, top man time scientist on that Star Trek Strange New Worlds, because I need that to happen in 2021. Because I need my ass amount and my Ethan Peck and my number one.
In my veins.
Okay. Last 2 hour episode about season.
Rose just said, yeah, I don't think this episode is going to take very long in the email.
Mm-mm. Yes, I did.
I was like, you a whole lie.
I was being generous because I know everyone's time, even though it's Rona, you know, everyone needs to make, you know, their time. So if anyone wanted to make sure that this was going to be longer, they could have voiced their concerns and we can just plot it out. But mm-hmm. I was trying to be generous. Sure. All right, y'all. Thank you all for listening to us. This is, you know, this is Roja, Parrish, and Ro. And thank you for listening to the NPR Network. And till next time.